So I will start with motivation. This comes, this is an example of several. It's not an uncommon choice. This is a review on dark matter detection, or a paper in dark matter detection from last year. And they are examining the minimal supersymmetric standard model and the dark matter candidates in this models. And they stop, that means they take densities, omega h squared, larger than 0.1. The reason is neutralinos with a lower density could not be the dominant form of dark matter in our galaxy. And thank you. And this is okay. And therefore, detection rates would necessarily be suppressed. And this statement actually is the subject of my talk. I don't say. this is a group of experts. I can tell you later, okay? But it's not an obscure set of people. But in any case, it's a choice. It's a common choice. And if you think of that, well, you may say, well, if it is a subdominant component, that means if 90% of the halo of our galaxy, or 99%, it consists of something else, that means if the WIMPs, particularly the neutralinos in this case, all the particular examples here are done with neutralinos because there are models that you can compute. Well, if they are 1%, say, of the halo, well, all the rates, the direct detection rates depend linearly on the density. Direct detection may depend quadratically, and so they are reduced by a factor of 100, 200, and therefore they're very difficult to see. These are my collaborators, actually, in different combinations, of whom Paolo Gondolo is here, and Gintaras Duda is one of my students at UCLA. So the question that I will deal with is the following. Assume that WIMPs constitute only a small fraction of the total dark matter. For example, 90%, 99% consists of collisional cold dark matter. Of course, the arguments for it are not very strong, or it is in discussion. But independent of that, it may be that the dark matter, cold dark matter, consists of an admixture of different things. And the particular candidate that we are looking for, or we find, constitutes a small amount. So are they detectable if the WIMPs constitute only a small fraction of the total dark matter? We can reverse this. If we find a signal, assuming 1 year, and our next talk from Edelweiss has a signal, okay? Have they found the dominant dark matter component, or maybe just something that may constitute 1% of the halo or less? Now, I will start by presenting my conclusions, and then I will return at the end of it. So this is the content of my talk. Actually, the rates don't decrease much until you get to something like less than a fraction of 1%. So if you see a dark matter signal soon in direct detection experiments, or in kilometer cube detectors, from the sun or from the Earth, in direct detection, direct signals from the sun or the Earth, then we could be seeing neutralinos with density fractions up to 1%, from 1 to 1%. In future direct dark matter searches, we could see even farther, smaller and smaller components. So in the next, in 3 years or so, we could get 10 to the minus 3. And if Genius or the liquid xenon big experiments are done, then we could get to a fraction 10 to the minus 5 of the halo, and you still have a signal. So instead, if you would have a signal from annihilations in the halo itself, you would suspect that it is the dominant component of the dark matter that has produced that, because the fluxes decrease with the density. There is no compensation, so I will explain in a moment. Now, some discrimination for this fraction is possible. If you see a signal either in direct or indirect detection from the sun or the Earth, there are some models which imply signals in all three, some in two, some in one. There is some discrimination that can be done as to the density fraction. So that is detection. This is compensation argument. So in target detection, you try to see the energy deposited from a halo, weakly interacting particle, colliding with a nucleus within a detector. And so that depends on the local density of the WIMP at the solar system and the Earth, and the scattering cross-section with a particular nucleus. Now, unless there is a peculiar segregation mechanism at play, the admixture of cold dark matter that we have locally in our halo should be the same as in the universe as a whole. So this is therefore the local density is proportional to the WIMP density in the universe. And so you have WIMP density in the universe and scattering cross-section. Now, second argument, the scattering, the WIMP remaining density for heavy particles which have been in equilibrium and decoupled from equilibrium, while non-relativistic, is inversely proportional to the annihilation cross-section in the early universe. So if they keep annihilating, they have large cross-sections, less of them remain. It's inversely proportional. Of course, here there is a thermal average and so on. But so this depends, therefore, the rate as the scattering cross-section over the annihilation cross-section. And the last element is this. There are crossing arguments which tell you that many times when the annihilation cross-section increases, also the scattering cross-section increases in the same way. If those arguments hold, then you have this ratio is constant and you don't lose rate. Now, these arguments are already known since the inception of the field 15 years ago, so the arguments are not known, not new. Crossing symmetry relates the amplitudes of cross channels. So if you have a Feynman diagram like this, you read it on one side, you have annihilation, chi-chi annihilation into two quarks. You read it on the other side, and this is a scattering diagram. And the reduced amplitudes for these two processes is the same. Now, the annihilation, the cross sections, don't depend only on these reduced amplitudes. They have kinematical factors, depends, and they have also form factors. The scattering is with a nucleus, annihilation is into quarks or other fermions. There may be resonances in one channel. There may be, for example, the annihilations can go into Ws or Zs. That could be the dominant channel, and you don't have Ws and Zs in the nucleus. So this is an imperfect argument, but it holds sometimes. Still holds sometimes. For example, this is an example of a neutralino, set of neutralino moles, which differ only in the Gugino-Higgsino fraction. That means in the coupling constants. And we'll see that when this is mostly Gugino, as a function of these coupling constants, we have a perfect compensation. As the density goes down and up, this is exactly opposite. And so the product stays practically constant. This is the scattering cross-section, and this is the annihilation cross-section at zero temperature, means in the halo or the sun or the earth, which will be important in direct detection in a moment. But you see that, first of all, these two go in the same way, and they are inversely proportional to omega H squared. So, we use a table of models to study a particular example, the lightest neutralino. We found 45,000 points. We haven't done any particular scanning of parameters to find any particular models. We use models already done. So we just plotted. And you see here, this is the rate in germanium. You see that the rate remains practically constant in the first two orders of magnitude of decrease of the density. If I show you just the tip, of course, this is a grid. This is a regular grid because the density of models don't have any meaning. It depends on the areas in which were interesting for other purposes. So these are the points that you would see, but the density doesn't have any meaning. So this is the region of the highest rates, and you see that in the first order of magnitude, you have all the rates within a factor of three, even less. How far can you go? And this is, we use here the, to make it independent of the nucleus, and one uses, then one uses here the scattering, neutralino proton scattering cross section. This is the spin independent one. And here we have different levels. So this is the present level. It's between 10 to the minus 5 and 10 to the minus 6 barns. You see already that you are sensitive to things that constitute 10 to the minus 2 of the halo. So this is the whole halo. We are assuming that the fraction of the total dark matter is the same fraction in the halo. So here is the whole halo. Here is the fraction, which is 10 to the minus 2. In 3 years or so, we will get probably, you know, to the next round of experiments, we will get to 10 to the minus 3. And if Genius or Liquid Synon get there, we will get up to 10 to the minus 5 of the halo. Now, same arguments now in direct detection. You can see also neutralinos. Indirect means that you see annihilation products. The annihilations can occur in the halo of the galaxy, in the center, or anywhere else. And you see that you annihilate two of them each time. So the annihilation cross-section depends on the annihilation rate depends on the annihilation cross-section and the square of the density. So even if you have a compensation between the annihilation cross-section and one of the powers of the density, this still goes linearly. And you can see this, this is not quadratic, but linear. This is exactly linear. This is the signal. This is the flux of antiproton, solar modulated at the minimum of the solar cycle, and so on. But it's linear, you see. That's why I say that if you have a signal, you would expect it to come from the from a dominant neutralino. Instead, in the Earth or the Sun, what annihilates actually is the component that is captured. So during the lifetime of the Earth or the Sun, these bodies move around in the halo, and from time to time, when neutralino interacts, collides with a nucleus in these bodies, loses energy and becomes trapped. And therefore, the capture rate depends on the scattering cross-section with a nuclei in the Sun or in the Earth, and the density. And therefore, here, there may be a compensation. And so the capture, when there is compensation, the capture rate is constant. This is the compensation argument. The capture rate is constant. Now, the capture rate is equal to the annihilation rate after, if you wait long enough time, there is an annihilation, there is an equilibration time that depends on them all. If the lifetime of the Earth or the Sun is longer, and this is the case for the Sun, for the highest rates, the equilibration time in the Sun is smaller than the lifetime of the Sun, so we are here. So the annihilation cross-section in the Sun becomes equal, except for a factor of two, to the capture rate, and therefore there is compensation. So this is the signal from the Sun. These are muons. What you see are muons. The only thing that escapes from the Sun are neutrinos. And neutrinos get around a kilometer cube underwater or under ice detector, and it produces muons, and the muons go through. Now, there is a compensation. You see that it doesn't decrease directly. So there is a compensation for the first order of magnitude. And then you have a decay. But you see that if you put the level of detectability at 10 muons per effective area of kilometer square per year, then you could see even to 0.5 10 to the minus 2, 5 10 to the minus 3 of the halo. Now, in the Earth, you do not get equilibration, actually. The highest rates come from non-equilibrated moles, and there you have then the annihilation cross-section depends on the annihilation rate depends on the annihilation cross-section and the square of the number of captured neutralinos. That means it depends. This number is just the capture rate multiplied by the time, so it goes as sigma a c squared. This is a constant. So this, the annihilation rate goes as sigma A. And if there is compensation, that means that this goes as one of the inverse. And therefore, you have an increase. You may have an increase of the signal as the density decreases. And this is what we see. This is what we see here. So if we would see for relatively light neutrinos less than 150 GeV, you see that you become above threshold of 10 only for densities which are 2% of the halo. For heavier, instead, you can have between 1% and the whole halo. Now, there are some signals, as I said, that are detectable in all of them. There are many more detectable from the sun. The sun is bigger. So these are the signals from the Earth of all the models that we had in this table detectable from the sun. And you see that only a fraction is detectable in the Earth. There are many more models, many more parameter space, much bigger parameter space coming detectable in the sun. This is, instead, these are all the models that we had that are detectable from the Earth. This is the signal in muons from the sun, in direct annihilation in the sun, which corresponds to models that will also have a signal from the Earth. So we'll be seeable in both, right? This in both. This has between 100 and a few thousand muons per effective area of kilometer squared per year, so they should be seeable. And now, if I put these points, the same points, I see what are the limits of those in this area. So I put the rate is proportional to the fraction, the density fraction, okay? So you see that I had the old Edelweiss. I'm sorry, I was not aware of So this is the new Edelweiss. This is the new Edelweiss. It's up some of them. You see that actually you can see, soon you could see some of these models. It would be very interesting if you would. Of course, these are other farther along the way. This would be in 3 years. In 3 years, if this is right, then in 3 years all these points will be either found or rejected. So I had my conclusions at the beginning. It's obvious that the rates don't decrease necessarily with the density, and so if we found a signal, we could be seeing a minor portion of the dark matter, and we will need to study and discriminate if that is the case. Thank you.
I guess so.